It's time for some filthy, nasty, dirty food porn. You know you want it. You know you need it. You know you deserve it. You've been bad, and now it's time to pay. Eric, what have you eaten lately that's, you know, given you a stiffy?
The lechon.
Lechon?
Yeah,
we're talking about like whole roasted pig?
Yeah, 80-pound pig, roasted very slowly, wood burning on a spit. Mm-hmm. And then the skin is super crunchy, and you can pull the ears, and, you know, it's gelatinous.
Grab
and
it by the ears,
kind
of thing?
And, yeah.
Yeah. You know what I'm thinking about? I'm thinking about, I was at Morea recently, and I...
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, you know the dish I'm talking about,
yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely.
It's like a little piece of a toasted Italian bread with two fat, semi-engorged sacks of sea urchin, over which a gossamer-thin slice of lardo, which has been made in the tubs in, Colonnada,
yep.
High in the Tuscan Mountains, in marble tubs. This thin, semi-cured pork, this sort of translucent sheet of the stuff melted over these sacks of sea urchin roe. You shove that in your face and your eyes just roll up into your skull. You want to black out. And
I tried, and it's amazing.
Yeah, that is some good
stuff. I wish I would
have
come up with that idea.
Yeah, okay, Mario. Wow.
All right, I got one. I was at St. John over the weekend having dinner with Fergus Henderson. And we had two things, one of which was their little brown shrimp with raw cabbage and a vinaigrette. And then I had a woodcock, the brain of which was served in the brain itself, inside the head. Me and my son sucked the brain out.
It was okay till the father-son thing. That's just that kind
of totally. Me and my kids share everything.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. Got a great show for you today. Joined by Don, my buddy Don, joining us.
Hey.
Welcome back, dude.
How's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good.
You know what? I realized you have not been back here since January of last year.
On the show... Yes.
Right.
We've done some videos.
We did the videos.
But yeah, on the audio, it's been hell yeah, it's been a year ago, January.
Yeah. Now, you were on the Bugs video,
uh-huh.
And you took me on the taco truck thing.
Right. And we ate durian.
And we ate durian. So there's three.
Yeah.
So you've been on the show.
Uh-huh.
You know, the reason I have you on videos is because my female listenership goes up when I have some eye candy on there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. Yeah, there's more and more of me to see these days.
So anyway, welcome back, man.
Thanks, man.
Now, we did the Brazil show, and man, we drank a lot.
We did.
Really fucked up.
I think that was like the lowest listenership of all your shows, too.
No, it was, yeah. Actually, yeah, that bumped it up a little bit,
yeah,
to be honest with you. And the other thing is, and I just used the F word, we did a lot of F-bombs.
We did.
And I realized, you know, after that, I bleep those now.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
But I'm not going to bleep them on this show because there are going to be too many of them.
That's right.
Right. So listen, this is not a kid's show. And here's the other thing. People call me all the time. They'll email me and say, my kid loves your show. And I'll go, oh, great. Then I'll think, oh, shit. You know, because there's a lot of content.
Sure.
Gee, wasn't I talking about eating last week? You know, it was ridiculous.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's so funny. Maybe this might be one you might want to have the kids sit out.
Right, right. Well, it's like watching No Reservations and Kitchen Nightmares in Brazil. None of it's bleeped out.
Is that true?
It's all raw.
Yeah, No Reservations in Brazil.
And Kitchen Nightmares is F-bombs and C-bombs,
okay,
and T-bombs.
Because about a year and a half ago, maybe even 2 years ago, I played a clip of... Kitchen Nightmares.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it wasn't Kitchen Nightmares. Hell's Kitchen.
Hell's Kitchen.
And he was yelling at these people, and
right.
It was all unedited footage, and yeah. It was the F-bomb city.
Oh, yeah. It's one after another.
And it had the Food Network logo on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's on, I think it's called Fox Life.
Yeah.
And then the other one's just Travel and Culture.
So, what, is it okay to curse on TV over there?
There's soft porn after 11 p.m.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Well, there's soft porn after 11 p.m. here on Cinemax.
But no, this is network TV.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, just common cable, dude.
Dude, you got to be kidding me.
Oh, serious. Every night.
Punch my ticket.
Let me get that visa.
Wow.
Yeah, really. No, it's just kind of goes along with the culture down there.
Well, listen, you bring up Bourdain. We're going to be talking about Bourdain today. This is kind of a Bourdain show.
Cool.
And the reason why I decided to do this was because Don and I kind of, we discovered Bourdain at the same time. Not together, but at the same time. We weren't really hanging out at the time. We knew each other,
right.
But we weren't hanging out. And I discovered Bourdain's Cook's Tour, mm-hmm. around the same time you did.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, and I got an interesting story. I didn't discover it on my own. I was working at my job, or my day job.
Yeah.
And we didn't have a lot of gourmands working there, right? There were a lot of foodies there. But there was this one gal who worked there, and then we were in the lunchroom one day, lunch break, and she looks at me and she goes, what are you having? I said, oh, this dish I made. I was having some leftovers.
Yeah.
And she goes, did you get the recipe off Food Network? And I was watching a lot of Food Network back then.
Right.
No, I didn't, but still. Yeah. So she goes, are you still watching Food Network? And I said, of course. And she said, have you seen A Cook's Tour? And I said, no, I haven't seen A Cook's Tour. And she goes, the guy, the host,
yeah,
he reminds me of you. He's sarcastic and negative.
Yeah.
And I'm like, gee, thanks, bitch. What the fuck was that supposed to mean?
Yeah, well, you know what's funny is because when I was watching that too, and before we were really kind of hanging out, we were friends and more acquaintances. But yeah, when I saw that a few times, I go, that kind of reminds me of Phil.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, but no, in a good way.
That's a compliment.
I mean, you know, you're both tall, skinny guys. You kind of have this. Your accent sometimes can come across a little East Coast.
Yeah, it's New York.
Yeah, a little bit sometimes.
Right.
Certain deflections in your voice get that, but it kind of reminded me of him. And so I just kind of thought that, and then I think we kind of brought it up one time. And
everyone has always talked about that. Yeah. And the reason why it is because my family was from New York, and my sister still lives there, by the way. But my family's from New York, and so my mother really never left New York, even though she came to California. In Arkansas, we talk like this.
That's funny.
And I just picked it up from my mother, never really lost it.
That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Anyway.
Yep.
Hey, listen, if people want to compare me to Bourdain, no fucking problem.
That's right.
I'll take that compliment. Damn right.
Absolutely.
Hey, off topic.
Huh.
I always tout that my show has a lot of male listeners.
Sure.
And I almost force my listenership toward the male side because it's dude-oriented, really.
Yeah.
But I've never really shied away from the fact that I know I've got female listeners.
Sure.
And so I love the fact that I've got female listeners. I've got two new female listeners. Actually, I've had them. Didn't know I had them.
Yeah.
I want to say hello to Simone from Australia. Emailed me.
Hey,
very nice Simone. To hear from her. She left a comment on the website. And Kim from West Virginia, who was also a listener, and they're going to Napa.
How y'all doing?
So I want to say hello to Kim in West Virginia. I want to say hello to Simone out in Australia. And Simone drinking beer.
Yeah?
She was drinking a Cooper's Vintage Ale.
Nice.
Yeah, she asked if we had Cooper's out here. We do have Cooper's.
Aussies have been known to drink a beer or two.
Or two, yes. So hello to both of you. And I tell that consent. I love to hear from new listeners, no matter what.
Oh, yeah.
I love that there are people that are lurking or, you know, have been listening because the numbers don't lie. The numbers are going up like crazy.
That's awesome. And this is a great podcast.
It's never thank you. It's never been about numbers. I don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I'm not gloating or anything.
Yeah.
But I love the fact that more people are listening, and I'm glad it's not it's not that I'm looking at my stats incorrectly or something. So.
Yeah. Well, I just feel privileged. I'm a fan. Okay, I'm a fan that happens to get to sit down with you and do this once in a while. This is awesome.
You practically influenced this show. Okay, so we're going to talk about Bourdain. One thing I did want to mention was the success of Eat My Blog. And any of you who showed up, I didn't meet. I met quite a few people, actually, that showed up. A lot of my friends showed up. And it was just a great event. We raised $5,500 for the LA Food Bank.
That's great.
Yeah, it was great.
Congratulations. Pot of beans.
Kathy at Gastronomy Blog.
Yeah.
Worked tirelessly. Every time I saw her, she was doing something. And she raised... she worked with a lot of people, Diane and a bunch of other bloggers that were there that were helping her out. I felt helpless. Like, I couldn't get back there. There were so many people back there working.
Right.
And I was so proud to be a part of so many great people. And not just because they were food bloggers or because they were bloggers in general, but they were really, they really wanted to raise this money. And, you know, they put a lot of their time, a lot of their money, a lot of their effort ahead of, it's a lot of personal sacrifice.
That's good.
And it was nice to see that. And there were a lot of people there. People showed up and said, what is this, a bake sale? And we go, yeah, local food bloggers. We cook some stuff. And they were like, this is a fancy bake sale. And I'm telling you something. It was amazing what they baked.
Yeah. What did you contribute?
Well, Joe made, nice segue.
Mm-hmm.
Joe made bacon-wrapped breadsticks on her blog. And this time she decided she wanted me to make the bacon because I make bacon. And so I wrapped bacon. And I made the bacon. I made about 15 pounds of bacon.
Wow.
Like six big slabs of bacon.
Oh, my God.
And I sliced it really thin. So when you bake it, it bakes fast, so it doesn't overbake the breadsticks.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't saturate.
Right.
Yeah, it's nice and crispy.
And it cooks at the same time, so they're cooked at the same time.
Awesome, that's great.
And it tasted fantastic. I'm telling you something. Imagine. It tastes like breakfast. Mm. It's a really good snack. So, yeah, very good success. So, hey, speaking of bacon, did you see the episode of Dude Food, the first episode of Dude Food?
Yes, I did.
Beef jerky?
Yeah, it was good.
I'm getting some good feedback on that.
In fact, I ate some of that today on the golf course.
Some of the beef jerky?
Yeah.
Nice. Uh-huh. Hey, that's a way to be supportive. I love that.
That's right.
Awesome.
Everything I can do.
Yeah, it was good.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it came out great. Thanks. It was really good.
The quality I wasn't very happy with, but that's going to change. We're going to do the rest of them in HD now.
Wow.
So, high definition on my mug.
Moving on.
Moving on up.
Oh, no. Yeah. Maybe that might not be such a good thing.
Hey, thanks.
I know. I put a little Vaseline on the lens when I get my shots. So
let's do the check mark. I'm negative, sarcastic, and ugly. So anyway, bacon is next on Dude Food.
Awesome.
So if you haven't seen Dude Food, check it out. I'm trying to develop a show to teach guys that it's okay to get in the kitchen. It's not going to make you gay if you get in the kitchen and cook some stuff.
No, it might get you laid.
It's definitely going to get you laid.
That's right.
I'll tell you something else, and I'll say this on the next episode there. You make bacon, you make her breakfast is right. Kind of a thank you.
Yes.
Okay, the next morning is like, hey, thanks a lot. I had a good time last night. Uh-huh. Make the bacon that you're cooking her for breakfast is for a little after breakfast.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Isn't that one of the things that Tony kind of brings up in his book?
Medium Raw?
About omelets. They say that the most experienced of the couple the following morning
should be making the omelet.
Make the omelet.
Good pull. Very good pull. I had totally forgotten that quote.
Yeah,
that's great. Hey, let's drink some beer, man, because I can't have you on here without us drinking a beer.
Okay.
All right. Go ahead. And what do we have?
We have the Stone Imperial IPA. It's their 14th anniversary for the Stone Fest coming up. What's that? Next month or? Yeah, it's August.
It's in August or September.
Mid-August. I think it's like the 21st or something like that.
Okay.
So, my glasses.
Spoon had a good question. Spoon from shouldidrinkthat.com.
Uh-huh.
What's the difference between an Imperial IPA and an Imperial IPA? The E?
Yeah, that's right. The misspelling?
I don't think Imperial is really a word, is it? Imperial?
Yeah. You don't never seen an emperor before?
What, do you see them in Arkansas?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Here, let me open this here Imperial IPA.
Speaking of Arkansas, yeah, dude, I'm going to go back there next year.
Why?
Because a lot of my classmates want to do a class reunion.
Uh-huh.
And Facebook has been incredible. I mean, classmates.com was like, they thought they had like the market cornered.
Yeah.
Facebook comes out, everybody joins Facebook. Next thing you know, we're all hooking up for free. You know, classmates wanted like, what, $20 or $25?
Yeah, it was like some premium membership bull.
Yeah. So I'm hooking up with a lot of people. No more even in my class, a lot of older ones or even some of the younger ones. And because, I like the younger ones.
Yeah.
And we're going to go and we're going to have like a class reunion and party.
Cool.
And I haven't seen Arkansas. It's grown up so much. Plus, James Spencer from Basic Brewing Radio. I've become...
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, kind of like pen pals with him, and I have such respect for the guy.
Mm-hmm. And he's based out of where?
I think Springdale or Fayetteville.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was from Farmington, so.
You're close.
I was, right down the way.
Mm-hmm. You're almost neighbors.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And Fayetteville's big. I mean, it's a big city.
Sure.
Yeah. All right, so what's the beer about? It's an Imperial IPA, obviously.
Yeah, it's the 14th anniversary for the beer festival. I mean, to be perfectly honest, I don't know that much about it other than we did try it the other day.
Yes.
Off mic.
Right.
And it was damn good.
Yeah, it kicked me in the butt.
Yeah, it was. Great color, good nose. Unfortunately, I'm not drinking a lot of big beers in Brazil. So
you're drinking mostly lagers over there.
It's all real thin lagers, and occasional there's like this one little microbrewery that's about 2 or 3 hours outside of Sao Paulo that's they make a Bock.
Oh.
That's a really good beer.
Nice. Yeah,
this place called Baden-Baden and these German expats.
So the beer is called Baden-Baden Bock?
Baden-Baden is the name of the brewery. And they make a Pils, they make a Bock, they make a double Bock.
Nice.
Yeah. And they make a Schwarz beer.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's great.
Yeah.
I love Schwarz beer.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's drink this.
Assoj.
Salute.
Saoji.
Yeah, the nose is a little weird.
Hmm.
I say weird. I mean, something I really can't explain very well.
You know, it's really interesting because the nose on it is almost Belgian-esque.
In a way,
There's a lot of floral to it, unlike a normal, like, IPA.
Yeah.
You put, or an Imperial IPA, you put a Pliny the Elder here, mm-hmm. next to it, where you get much more of that fresh cut grass
right.
aroma.
Right.
Where this one is, there's a little more of a, I mean, there's citrus, but there's also a floral
scent. And I'm picking
scent.
Up, I'm doing it again. I'm picking up tobacco.
Yeah.
You getting a tobacco in there?
I don't know. You know, it's getting way over the top for me.
You
it
were like,
good.
Listen, you were sitting like, you know, because I had these two big fat cigars sitting there. We were going to go out and smoke, and they were Maduro, and you know, just the aroma of this stuff just comes off, and they yeah. weren't lit. They were just sure. sitting there. And he goes, "No, you're smelling those cigars." I go, "No, I'm not. I'm smelling it in a beer. You poured in a snifter. You got it too."
Yeah, yeah.
So it wasn't just me.
Yeah,
those were good cigars, though.
Yes, they were very good. Great beer, tasty.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. It's good.
We had their 10th anniversary. The 10th anniversary was actually kind of reminiscent of Dude Night because it was around the time that Dude Night started. And Don and I had, we were in full swing, wasn't it? You know, we were about 6 months in, right?
About that, yeah. Yeah. It was really new.
So it kind of was reminiscent of Dude Night. And so I brought it out about 4 months ago, 5 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And
we drank it. Yeah, my last trip up.
Yeah. And it was murky and it was good.
It was really good. It lost a lot of the nose.
Yeah, it lost almost
but
everything.
But the taste was still there. It was still strong.
It's good beer.
You know, it just kind of goes to prove what Vinny of Russian River says. Drink the Imperial IPAs and everything now.
It's like catching a brown trout in Montana. That's catch right. and release, man.
Catch and release.
You get it, you drink it.
That's right.
Hey, so listen, you were telling me when you were here the other night that there was this restaurant that you found in Brazil. It was a French restaurant.
Ah, yeah. Yeah.
Tell everybody about this because it's great.
Yeah, I went down to this little kind of a portside village called Paraty, and it's on the international landmark list. I mean, it's unbelievable. The place was, I think, founded in the 1400s, late 1400s, and it's a port town for all the mines. So when the gold was being ored in Minas Gerais, this was the area where they would load it up on the ships and take it back to Portugal.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's become a real strong tourist place. And my girlfriend and I were walking around and looking for a place to eat. And it was kind of cool. It was, the ambiance was just right. It was probably warm, tropical feel, light kind of misty, rain in the air. And there was this little sign over this door. It said the Castellet, I think is the name of it.
Castellet.
Castellet. Not Cazulet, but Castellet. And I think that's it's a small village or something like that in the Provence area.
Uh-huh.
And so... In the window, it said "Aioli hoje," and "hoje" in Portuguese means today. So "Aioli today."
So "Aioli today."
Yes. So I told Alexandra. I said, "Let's go check out what's going on inside." She said, right. "Yeah, sure." We go inside, and it ends up being this guy that was French dude comes down to Paraty for a holiday and decides, "I'm staying." And
so he comes down for vacation.
Yeah, yeah. And he ends up staying, opens up a restaurant, gets the whole thing going. And I mean, there's maybe six tables inside, one waitress and him and a couple of assistants. And that's it.
Wow.
And so I told Alexandra, I said, "You need to try Aioli. It's amazing."
She never had it before.
No, she didn't know what it was. So I asked the waitress if it's possible that we can just get some Aioli for bread. And she said, "Nope, no apology. Not possible. You can't." And so she was trying to explain to us that it's not possible. We can't do it. Da da da. And then the chef, the owner, comes out, and he comes over to me, and at that point, my Portuguese was not very good.
He says, "Listen to me, fucking gringo.
Listen to me, buddy, güero, gringo, estrangeiro. We don't give you out just a little bit. We make it to order.
Right.
So it's you request it, and he makes it, and so you get this pestle made." Mortar and pestle made aioli,
right.
That it's perfect, you know, color, room temperature, just the way you want it. Steamed vegetables and a big hunk of white fish.
Mm.
And it was incredible.
Wow.
Wonderful. And I mean, that alone could have been dinner. That with a little salad and we could have been done.
That kind of is dinner.
Yeah. But we didn't think it was going to be that big. So we ordered an entree as well. And
doggy bag?
Oh, not really. It's not really possible because we were staying in a hotel. So we just, you know, ate what we could and left it behind. But we had this beautiful piece of, it's called picanha, which is a steak, kind of like a New York strip cut.
Right.
And then on top of that was a red wine mushroom sauce.
Oh, phenomenal.
And then Alexandra, she got seafood cazolet. So take out all the traditional earthiness that goes into cazolet. Still white beans, but Fish. Wow. And like fruits de mar.
That sounds more Portuguese, actually. Oh,
it really was. Yeah, it was incredible. Wow. I mean, the food was amazing. And he had wine by the jug that was from Argentina, which was nice, big, heavy wine, fit perfect with it, cheap.
Malbec?
No. I think it was Cab.
Was it?
Yeah, either a Cab or a Cab blend. It didn't have that Malbec earthiness. Right. There was a little bit of a tannin to it. So it seemed like it was a little more of a blend.
I always wondered if your move or your gravitation toward Brazil had anything to do with Bourdain, because I know that when Bourdain went to Brazil, it was like, you know, he's got a lot of, this is my favorite place in the world.
Yeah.
But Brazil, it really did seem like it was his favorite place in the world when he went. Did that have anything to do with your decision to kind of go there?
No, it didn't. Because I had a lot of other things that kind of drew me that way. But I see, after being there, I've seen what drew him there.
Right.
I mean, as far as like the fresh food, the people, the culture. I mean, I live in Sao Paulo, so it's an ugly city. I mean, he explained it perfect. I mean, it's basically New York with Los Angeles thrown up on top.
Right.
That is the only way you can explain Sao Paulo, and then take it from 15 million people to 24 million people.
I think the reason why he likes it because they show porn on TV after 11.
That's right, and it's free. He doesn't have to pay for it in his hotel. No, the food's good. The people are good. They have fresh ingredients. It's not overly expensive to eat good,
right,
and to eat healthy,
right,
and to eat good fast food. The stalls are good. The street vendors are good. The corner pastelería, which makes little pastels, which are these little, for lack of a better term, it's a deep fried wonton.
Right.
I mean, is what it looks like, and then they put all kinds of different things inside. They're amazing,
wow.
and they're cheap. You can get that and a drink like a cola de cana, which is cane juice. They basically take stalks of sugar cane and they have this little pressing machine and they run it through and you get fresh cane juice.
Wow!
So you have that and it kind of cuts the oil or anything that could be in the pastel.
Yeah,
you can eat that for like $3.
Jeez.
And you're done. Yeah, and you're full. I mean, this sucker is 6 inches long by 3-4 inches wide.
There's not a lot of processed food there, right?
No, there is McDonald's.
Well, of course, there's fast food.
Right, yeah. But I mean, as far as processed food, no. You have the canned foods and you have things like that inside the supermarkets, but it's not like here when you go to the market. And if you go down the middle aisles,
mm-hmm,
are the danger aisles,
right,
and everything that's important is on the sides.
Right.
I mean, like for example, the local market that I go to, as soon as you walk in, the whole front, right after the cash registers, is fresh produce.
Nice.
It's fresh produce, okay? And then down the left-hand side, you have dairy. And then the next row after that is basically jarred, like preserved things.
So it's not olives, like a perimeter like it is here, right? So
they have the perimeter too, but the perimeter, like the other side is, I mean, the other side of the perimeter is beer and wine.
Okay.
And then, you know, the liquor's in the back. But then all the different aisles, I mean, you do have a few things that are, you know, kind of given for a market.
Right.
But not like what we deal with.
Right.
I mean, it's completely different.
Well, you also said that on the last show, I played this clip of Bourdain talking about fast food, how fast food is good food.
Yeah.
And there's a difference between what the fast food that we deal with here,
right,
and the fast food that there is in the rest of the world.
Sure.
In Brazil, the fast food there, now take away McDonald's and Burger King and Kentucky Fried Chicken. What was it about that drove you?
What really kind of struck the nerve for me?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is. Fast food is good food. It really is. Because you look at this, the guy's
There's a reason why we love it.
Well, yeah, there's a reason why we love it, because it tastes good. I mean, it's usually fried or grilled,
right,
or sautéed in a pan. You know, it's pretty straightforward what you're going to get.
It goes back to that thing that where, you know, our moms used to tell you, if it tastes good, it's probably not good for you.
Sure.
You know? And I don't think a lot of times that's true now. I mean, I don't think that way anymore.
No.
I mean, I used to, but I don't think that way anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there is some really delicious food. Fresh peas. I mean, there's nothing like that.
No.
You know?
Right. But I think the whole thing about the fast food side is that, I mean, you look at these guys, they have to go to the same place day after day. So if they're poisoning their clientele, they're not going to make it. They're going to fail. Secondly, I don't see a big walk-in freezer that they can go into day after day right behind them and pull things out from a week before.
Right.
I mean, these guys, what they buy that morning, they sell, they make, and they go away. And the next morning, they go to the big federal market, they buy it, they put it in, they sell it, they cook it, they go from there. So you don't have that month supply of box food that was made in a processing plant, 200 miles away, or buying a fruit from another country. I mean, this stuff is all, you look at it and you go, wow, this stuff looks like it's been in a farmer's market.
Right, fresh.
It doesn't look like it's been, shipped 300 miles and then injected with food coloring.
Right.
I mean, this stuff it's real food.
Sure.
It's good. It's really cheap. McDonald's is more expensive than all those guys.
Is it really?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but there's still a line out the door.
Let me ask you a question. Sure. Now, McDonald's touts this dollar menu that they have here.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have a dollar menu in Brazil? Or is it a $2 menu?
No.
$3 menu?
A real menu? No, they don't have those kind of special little menus like that. No, you go in, they have the little combos and stuff, but it looks completely different. Yeah. I mean, I went in there once, and, it was such a long line. I just went there to basically get something to drink. And they do sell beer.
In McDonald's?
In McDonald's in Brazil, yeah. But, I mean, I just got a Coke. It was a hot day, and I just wanted something
Budweiser?
Cold and fresh. No.
No?
No, Budweiser is very expensive. I think it's Skol.
Budweiser is expensive, then?
Very. Yeah. In fact, I went to an American expat bar, and they had Budweiser on tap.
Holy shit.
And it was like $8 a pint.
So Don and I have known about Bourdain about the same time, right? So getting to brass tacks here, when we got the opportunity to meet him together, he was doing a book signing for Leal Cookbook.
Right.
And we went, it was here in Orange County, and he said the same thing that, what was the guy, the comedian from Damon Wayans?
Yeah.
From In Living Color. Katrina and I had gone to see him in at the Improv in, I think, Brea. At the time.
Okay.
And he comes and he does his thing and he goes, hey, Orange County. He goes, what the hell do you do in Orange County? There's nothing going on here. Bourdain pretty much said the same thing.
Yeah, he said it's pretty sanitary.
He spent the evening in Koreatown the evening before getting drunk on Japanese whiskey, rice whiskey, he said.
Smoking cigarettes and drinking whiskey until, 3 or 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
And he looked and smelled like it, too.
He looked pretty hammered.
Yeah. It looked like he crawled out of the back of the taxi that drove him down.
But you see a guy like this, and, I've never been one to really aspire to be a businessman or a suit and tie guy.
Mm-hmm.
I've always aspired to just kind of do my own thing, and, who gives a shit?
Sure.
So... To see a guy like this and be successful, and I know he had a rough life. I mean, you read Kitchen Confidential, it just did not sound like it was a very easy life
tough.
For him.
I mean, he's here in spite of himself.
Yeah, he is, exactly.
Yeah.
So, it was great to meet him. We took our picture with him.
He signed cookbooks. We listened to him. He read a little excerpt, I think, of one of his books. He went over. It was right before... No Reservations came out.
It was long before, because we thought he was going to go to Vietnam and write a book.
No.
He was going to live there for a year.
He was talking about
that?
Living there, right, which I think he did.
He's still living. He's still talking about doing that. He hasn't done it yet.
Okay. Yeah. Well, but he was talking about it then.
Yes.
He was talking about it. But he did have one show in the bag for No Reservations, because he discussed France.
Oh, okay.
Paris.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you had a good memory. I don't remember that.
It's the beer.
Oh.
It's actually knocking.
Dude, the beer keeps me from remembering stuff.
Well, sometimes it kind of brings things back. Don't ask me about what I've just said 3 minutes ago, but I'm going to remember something from 10.
Okay, then. So you didn't mean that you love my show then, really?
What?
Okay, whatever. Hey, you know what? Never mind. Whatever, dude.
Mais cachaça.
Oh, okay, then. Anyway, Bourdain was cool that day. He actually bitched me up because I didn't bring the cover to my book, because I had actually... I didn't know that he was going to be impressed that I had duck blood and duck fat and something else, some kind of cheese had gotten on it. And I'd already cooked like 3 dishes from it. He wrote notes in his book. You got notes on... Beef bourguignon was the first thing you made.
Sure.
I made vichyssoise was the first thing I made out of his book.
Yeah.
And then I made the beef bourguignon.
Right. And I made the rillettes, too.
I mean, there was some potato dish he did I made, too, as well. I don't remember what it was.
Oh, okay.
And a rabbit dish. So I had done 4 dishes prior to going.
Right, I think you were up on me a couple.
Well, I got it, and I'm like, holy crap, this is great. And the way he wrote, it was so, it was just so down to earth.
Sure. Yeah, no, I think I did Bordeaux, the beef bourguignon and the rillettes.
Right.
And then when I went up to talk to him, get the picture picture and all that stuff, he said, oh, so you've been cooking from it. I can see, because there are like all kinds of grease and shit all over it. And he said, what's your favorite thing? I said, so far it's been the rillettes. He's all, the rillettes? That's the easiest thing in the goddamn book. He's all you do is just let it sit around and cure.
Thanks a lot. Beat me down,
that's
bitch.
That's right, yeah. Break my balls.
Wow, dude.
I am taller than you, buddy.
That's funny, man.
Yeah.
Well, his new book, Medium Raw, I finished it in a weekend. I just blowed through it. And right. I was impressed by it. I mean, I really like him as a writer. He's fantastic.
Yeah.
Even you said that.
Oh, yeah.
He's got such a way about his writing. And mm-hmm. it's, you know what? It's different than a Cook's Tour. Because go back and read a Cook's Tour.
Right.
The way he writes now is a little bit more, it's like he's been experienced. He's seen He's seen the world.
He's in graduate school. I mean, it's a whole different game. I mean, he's been through a lot.
But he wrote a Cook's Tour like a novelist. He wrote this one like he was just talking to you.
Sure.
It's a different book.
A little more dialogue.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's very straightforward.
Yeah. Well, and what I really found about it is that there's a little more of like a introspective view in it.
Oh, yeah, because he's looking back on 10 years in his life.
Sure.
You know, 10 years from the time he wrote Kitchen Confidential.
Yeah.
So basically, this was like a 10-year anniversary book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, and I made a list of things that I learned from Medium Raw.
Okay.
You want to hear them?
Sure.
What I learned was Alan Richman actually is a douchebag.
Check. I agree with that.
I learned that Food Network is evil, but no more evil than any other network.
Right. No, you know what? No more evil than any other large corporation.
Okay, but yeah. I mean, we're talking about in regards to a network.
Sure.
Because, you know, it made to seem that Food Network is this evil empire.
Right, right.
It's no more evil than Anheuser-Busch. They just produce something that the masses like.
Right.
And it sells advertising.
Mm-hmm.
Food Network sells a lot of advertising.
Sure.
Because the programming that they, you know, put on their network, people watch it.
Right.
Now, listen, if, you know, we love to Cook's Tour, but the problem is we're a small audience.
Sure.
We really are. We're a niche audience.
Yeah.
And they just can't afford to be that small.
Yep.
You know?
No, they're looking at the focus groups that are going to make them money.
Right.
Yeah. And they
so
have to.
You can hate Food Network all you like, but the bottom line is their investors love them. And there's a purpose for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just commercialism.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, you got to make money. So it's not for our palate. And neither is Budweiser.
Sure.
But those, you know, it's another company, so you have to look at it that way. The other thing I learned is that his marriage was a real piece of crap. His wife, Nancy,
right,
was, she was an overachiever. She went to, he called it a five-sister school or something like that. I don't know what the hell that meant.
Okay.
Like it was a Catholic school or something.
I don't know.
I don't know what that means. She didn't want to work. She wanted him to bring the bread.
Sure.
And she'd get a job, and she wouldn't do very well at it. And when she'd get a job, it wouldn't last very long.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he was frustrated. And I think, and he said this, I don't think this, but he said this. The reason why Kitchen Confidential was so snarky and so negative was that he was busting his ass at that restaurant, Layoff.
Mm-hmm.
And he was coming home, tired.
Right.
He'd go to bed. He'd wake up in the morning, and he'd have to write for 3 hours before he'd have to go back to work. And it was just a shitty life. So those 3 hours that he wrote was full of venom.
Sure.
And so he wrote Venom and Kitchen Confidential. He was literally, Medium Raw was his book, was his way of saying, I'm sorry for the shit I wrote in Kitchen Confidential.
Yeah.
Like he didn't mean the don't buy fish on Mondays thing. Although he did mean it, but he didn't mean it to sound so horrible. He didn't,
snide and condescending.
Yes, exactly. He didn't mean to be so mean to Emeril.
Sure.
Or Bobby Flay.
Yeah.
Or any of them.
Right.
Right. I think Paula Deen, he still means it. And Rachel Ray, he definitely doesn't mean it because his wife's like in love with him.
All right. Okay.
Can I have more beer, please?
Yes, you
can. I don't
mean
to sound like an alcoholic, but you're drinking really slow.
I'm sorry.
So anyway, the new season of No Reservations starts July 5th on the Travel Channel. It's going to be very exciting. He's going to celebrate his 100th episode. I don't know where he goes for his 100th episode. Hopefully it's Vietnam, because I think that kind of defines him.
Brazil!
So he's going to Spain. He's going to France with Eric Rappaire.
Oh, that'd be cool.
The biggest pimp, right?
Yeah. Right? It's cool.
Caribbean islands, Liberia, India, tons more.
Wow.
Who knows?
That'll be fun. That'll be good. It's one of the. It's funny. The No Reservations that I get down in Brazil are reruns. They're pretty old.
Right.
But I subscribe to iTunes.
Right.
And I get it there. I mean, that's how I get Top Chef and some of these others as well.
Sure.
And that's one that I'm willing to pay for. And I mean, I have them all archived.
What are they, awesome. $1, $1.50?
I think you can get the whole season. If you buy it pre-season, you can get it for, you know, that one, I think it's under $20.
Okay.
Yeah. I bought Food Tech that way.
Nice.
Yeah. Season one of Food Tech. I bought it on iTunes.
My buddy Bobby Bogner,
Bobby
man.
Bobby, man. He made it to Brazil.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's funny. If only my girlfriend watched it. He's funny.
He is funny. He's a great host, man.
He's good.
You know, Bobby Bishes, I don't talk about him enough. So another thing I learned about Bourdain's book, Medium Raw, after his divorce, his life just went to shit. He actually tried to commit suicide.
Oh, yeah, on that island.
He moved to some Caribbean island. He didn't say which one it was. Mm. And basically, yeah, he'd say he'd wake up at, I don't know, what, 10 o'clock in the morning. He'd smoke two joints. Mm-hmm. Then he'd go to the beach, and he'd sit at the beach all day, and he'd drink beers and get fucked up. And he'd come back 4 o'clock in the afternoon. He'd take a nap. He'd wake up at about 8 o'clock. He'd go out.
Smoke more joints,
drink more beer, mm-hmm. party. And then at some point, maybe 2 o'clock in the morning or something, he'd be eating something. And be crap falling all over his shirt. And he'd just be this trail of lettuce.
We've never been there.
No. And then he'd get in his car and drive back to his place through this road that was on the cliff. And he'd be driving like 90 miles an hour.
Yeah.
On this cliff with no lights.
Sure.
And basically, he's just hoping he would die, and it would be smooth and swift. And I just can't imagine that after kind of achieving some semi-success, especially considering the fact, and this is another thing in the book, that a cook's tour only happened because Bourdain's book, Kitchen Confidential, got popular, mm-hmm. right? And he said, fuck, I better strike where the iron's hot.
Right.
So he goes to them and says, I want another book, and here's what I want to do. I want to travel the world, I want to write about it, and I want to eat and look for the perfect meal. So go to all these different countries and find out which one was a perfect meal. Mm-hmm. And they said, fine, we want to send a TV crew with you. And it turned out to be from the Food Network, the same network he was bashing
right.
in Kitchen Confidential.
Exactly.
So he literally was, he said, okay, whatever.
Ate some crow and got on the road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And here's what he thought of that.
Fuck writing books. Fuck making television.
That's our boy.
I agree. How about when he went to Russia? Remember when he went to Russia?
Oh, yeah. He did it a couple times, right?
With Zemir?
Zemir.
Well, on Cook's Tour, I think he only did it once, did he? Was it twice?
Yeah, that's right. Once on Cook's Tour, and then he did it again on No Reservations.
But the thing about Russia, and you know, people think, you know, say Russia alcoholics.
Yeah.
They really are alcoholics.
They are. Raging.
Our waitress says we are not drinking enough vodka. She's concerned. I searched my waitress's face, trying to find a hint of a smile. Was she kidding? I didn't know. Now, try to imagine this happening in an American restaurant or bar. Your waiter comes to your table and says he doesn't think you're consuming enough booze, that you need more alcohol, and you need to consume it quickly. Our highways would be demolition derbies of colliding muscle cars overloaded with drunken frat boys, senseless yuppies, and out-of-control secretaries stoked on spritzers and woo-woos. In Russia, though, this is apparently normal. At the time of their deaths, 3 out of 5 Russian men, I am told, are found to have a blood alcohol level exceeding what one needs to qualify for a DWI. That doesn't mean the booze killed them, just that the majority of Russian men happen to be drunk when they die.
That's awesome. That's true. Functioning drunks.
I was smoking and trying to look cool, as if what I'd just seen hadn't bothered me at all. The pig was positioned head away, hind legs and butt pointed in my direction. Alan, one of the shooters for the TV crew, was standing next to me, shooting from a crouch as the men washed and rinsed the pig's upper body. Suddenly, and without warning, one of the men stepped around and, with the beast's nether regions regrettably all too apparent, plunged his bare hand up to the elbow in the pig's rectum, then removed it, holding a fistful of steaming pig shit, which he flung unceremoniously to the ground with a loud splat before repeating the process. Alan, professional that he is, veteran of countless emergency room documentaries, never flinched. He kept shooting. You never know, I guess, what footage you might just be required to have during the editing process. But I had a hard time imagining the pig-fisting scene on the Food Network.
You know, Dan Patrick Show. I love the Dan Patrick Show.
Yeah.
You know, I watch it on 101 in the morning. We wake up
to it.
And we listen to it on, you know, Fox Network and XM Radio. I love because they don't just talk about sports. They'll bring up food. They'll bring up beer. And they're really into this, you know.
It's kind of a man show.
Yeah, it's a man show. It's the new man show.
It is.
It lasts 3 hours.
Right.
So it's really fantastic.
Yeah.
So they do this thing on beer snobbery because they're making fun of us because, you know, people like us who really like beer. We take beer seriously.
Well, there's a difference about somebody who enjoys beer and there's a beer snob.
Right.
Big difference.
I think we've been beer snobs in our day.
Yeah.
And I'm still kind of a beer snob. Even though I'll drink the cheap beer from now, you know, if I have to, I'll drink the cheap beer. I don't have a problem with it.
That's all we drink in Brazil.
Is it the cheap beer?
It's thin, and you have to drink it ice cold.
Listen to these guys bust balls on beer snobbery.
I'm a beer snob, though.
No, actually, you're not. You take whatever's cold and available.
Yeah.
But there's some guys, you know, you go to their basement, they have like all the foreign beers and nothing else.
I know, because you'll go over to a party and somebody wants to dress up the party, and I'll just say, you know, just give me a beer. And they'll go, well, what would you like? We've got Grolsch. We've got, and they'll start running down all these. I said, just give me, like, do you got a Guinness? Or
when you start going, it's like a 90-minute IPA. Or whatever, and you're like, what? I don't know what that is. What's this going to do to my palate? Is it going to completely destroy it?
Am I going to have to let this breathe or something?
This is tough.
This is Magic Hat number 7. It was a fine year for Magic Hat.
You know, the thing is, it's great that 90-minute IPA got a mention.
And Magic Hat. Which is a good brewery.
Yeah, very good brewery.
Very good brewery out of Vermont.
And the fact that they knew who those were means they drink
They drink it. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not just the Budweiser Pabst boys. They drink it all.
Yeah. I think it's funny that he goes, you know, the guy says, no, all I have is Grolsch. He goes, oh, no, come on. I don't mind that fancy stuff. You got a Guinness? It's a fucking difference.
It's true.
You know?
It's an import.
It just seems that the more I talk about sports on my show, the more they talk about food and beer on their show.
Well, good. You're blending it together.
I think so.
I did have bangers and mash, though, when Paulie and I went to watch the World Cup on Saturday.
First time you order that at an Irish pub, though, you're not sure what it is, until they tell you.
Yeah, but it's good. Yeah, I was fine with that. I had my Smithix on tap, and I was good to go.
What is Smithix?
Smithix?
Yeah.
It's like a nitrogenated light beer from England.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a lot like a Boddington's or a Tetley's.
So Smithix is an actual name of a brewery. Mm-hmm. I've never had it before.
Yeah.
Smithix?
Yeah.
Do you have that?
Like, I've had it. In fact, you know what's really funny?
We don't get it here, do we?
Yeah, yeah. Yesterday, I was at the Harp in Newport Beach watching World Cup.
How come I've never seen it?
They have it on tap there.
Oh, so you don't have it in bottles. They only have it on tap.
Maybe they have it in bottles. I don't know. Maybe they have it at High Times in Newport. But,
okay.
But no, I went in there, and actually it's funny. They talk about bangers and mash. I had that for lunch, and it sucked.
It sucked?
It was terrible. They had Italian sausage in there. Not a nice blended, you know, like a nice.
Where were you?
The Helm. Or no, the Harp.
Hmm.
The Harp in Newport, an Irish pub. Yeah.
Yeah, that's wrong.
Very disappointing.
Next time, go to the Old Ship.
I've been there.
Yeah.
I watched the Brazil game.
Decent bangers at the Old Ship in Fullerton.
I had a proper British breakfast.
Nice.
Yeah. And then
proper British breakfast. I'll put you to sleep.
Dude, fried bread.
With beans.
Ham, beans, bacon, eggs.
Blood sausage.
And, they had the ham instead of blood sausage.
Okay.
Yeah, they didn't have the blood sausage. I wish they did.
Bangers and mash? What does that entail?
Sausage and potatoes.
Okay.
Yeah.
A little onion gravy?
Yeah.
You ever do black pudding?
Yeah, I couldn't go there. I did it once.
Mm.
Now, there's some things that... And you go over in Europe, and they're going to put mayonnaise on things. And like, you just go, no, I don't want it. That's the way we eat it. No, I don't eat it that way. And they wonder why they get a bad rap on food.
Do they get a bad rap on food?
Who? Euros?
Yeah.
No, we get a bad rap on food because we douse everything in ketchup.
See, he's full of shit.
That's the funny thing. You go outside of the United States and you go to a restaurant, like, and you order frites, pommes frites. Yeah, patatas fritas.
See.
Okay. You get that, and they look at you and they go, oh, you're American. They bring this big fucking, sorry.
Don't say sorry. I've used that for 10 times already.
They bring this big bottle of ketchup and set it down on your plate because they think you're going to eat it and douse everything in ketchup.
They automatically assume
they think that.
That
you're just going to throw ketchup on everything.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, maybe when they come here, we should lock up all our windows. You think they might think differently about us?
Yeah.
Maybe that's okay.
Well, yeah.
Paulie, don't look at me that way. You know that the food is bad over there.
I was in the Netherlands once, and I ordered a hamburger, which was probably my fault. And it came out, it was like this purplish-blue color. And I was like, I can't go this. I can't roll with this. Otherwise... Amsterdam was great.
Can you order it that way? How would you like your burger? Purple, please?
Yeah, bluish.
I thought it was interesting when I saw the all the Americans in the crowd some of them were drinking Budweiser, which I didn't think would be a big beer over in South Africa.
It's a big beer around the world.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been in Ireland and had Budweiser.
No kidding.
Absolutely. Yeah. Budweiser is on, I think it's Bud and Coors Light is on all the taps in Ireland.
Yeah.
But they have like Guinness, Smithix, Bud Light, Coors Light, And Heineken's pretty big worldwide.
Yeah.
Guinness is huge. We learned when we were over there, Guinness is huge in Africa. Huge.
I would not think that.
Huge. That's their I think their third biggest continent.
No kidding.
Now, is Budweiser a big beer around the world?
You see it.
You see it, but is it, do the people drink it?
Yeah.
Because Budweiser actually had the corner on the market at the World Cup.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the one in Germany, of no doubt. Because Budweiser is like the official sponsor of the FIFA World Cup.
But it is this year.
And this year as well. That's right.
So that's the
only, pretty much
is that
the, it could be the only beer being sold in the stands.
You got to be kidding me.
Yeah, because in Germany it was like that.
Is it the same Budweiser they're serving here?
Yeah. Anheuser-Busch, man. It's not Budvar. It's Budweiser.
Please.
Yeah. So they had Budweiser and Bitburger.
Bitburger.
Both.
Yeah, Bitburger was Gonzo's favorite beer.
Yeah, yeah.
Back when he had balls.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now I think it's just there's balls are being preserved in Bitburger.
You know, we're just trying to get a rise out of Gonzo. That's we want him to call us.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You know what I think?
What?
I think they learn a lot listening from this show.
I think they do. I think they're taking notes on this show and applying it
secretly,
to the Dan Patrick Show.
The Dan Patrick Show is listening to my show.
That's right.
I'll tell you something. I'm just happy, no matter what, no matter how negative that might have seemed, I'm happy that Dogfish Head 90 Minute and Magic Hat got a mention.
Yeah,
big deal. I'm watching Formula One racing, right? And Pedro de la Rosa's Sauber Formula One car has a Burger King logo on it.
Sure.
And of course, the cars are going so goddamn fast. I don't see shit.
Yeah.
I swear to you, it looks like a Burger King logo. So they do a close-up on the car, and I freeze frame it, and I'm boom, boom, boom. Of course, thank God for HD.
Sure.
I see the Burger King logo.
Wow.
Immediately, I Google it.
Uh-huh.
Sure enough, I find out that the Spanish team, the Spanish Burger King, has the money to sponsor, because they needed the money to sponsor this Formula One team. Formula One, it's a lot of money it requires to keep a team going.
Ridiculous.
In the millions of dollars, how much do you think it costs to sponsor a team for a year?
Oh, it's hundreds.
Hundreds of millions of dollars?
Yeah.
So they went to Burger King, and Burger King in Spain had the money to sponsor the team.
Burger King's huge in Europe. It's all over the place.
How does Burger King have that kind of money in Spain, of all places?
It's probably Burger King EU. I mean, it's probably the whole group. The
European Burger King?
Yeah.
It just seems so shameful to me that, you know, Spain, the one country that really prides itself on its food, just lets that happen.
It's selling out.
Wow.
It's lifting up your skirt.
Hey, did you hear the story on CBS News ran the story on high fructose corn syrup?
Oh, God.
That's really not that bad?
It's hard to believe.
Well, they're making the comparison between regular sugar, cane sugar, and high fructose corn syrup.
Right.
And they're saying that there's no difference between the two, that the result is the same.
Turn on the TV and there's an ad promoting it.
That has high fructose corn syrup in it.
And? Or a different ad promoting its absence.
Announcing the taste of all natural ingredients.
But what exactly is high fructose corn syrup?
It's cornstarch that has been treated to turn it into sugar. It is sugar. It's just sugar.
But a lot of people aren't buying that. Just last month, parents in San Francisco forced high fructose corn syrup out of the chocolate milk in the school system. Why?
They have a natural suspicion of anything in their food system that they feel is not natural.
And parents say the name sounds like a chemical. Consumer experts say this backlash is not just a fad.
Consumers really want foods and ingredients that sound like they came out of their refrigerators or kitchen cupboards and not a science lab.
But the Corn Refiners Association is fighting back by running ads like this one.
And it's fine in moderation.
Even as some companies are busy removing high fructose corn syrup from products, citing reasons like consumer trends.
In the food industry, the consumer is king. When the consumer is very vocal about demanding changes, food manufacturers listen.
But in this case, is it necessary? Chemically speaking, high fructose corn syrup is just sugar with an image problem. It starts as corn starch, and enzymes are used to convert it into glucose and fructose. Various chemicals extract table sugar from sugar beets and sugar cane. It's also made up of glucose and fructose in virtually the same proportions. High fructose corn syrup started replacing sugar around 1980, mainly because it's cheaper. It's almost half the price of sugar, partially because the United States, the world's largest grower of corn, subsidizes farmers who grow it, and that lowers the price. The U.S. restricts the import of sugar, which raises its price. High fructose corn syrup also prolongs shelf life and gives a moist and chewy consistency, while sugar is better for crispness. You would think that the food police, the ones who yelled at us about fat and salt in Chinese food and theater popcorn, would also be yelling about high fructose corn syrup. But instead,
the evilness of high fructose corn syrup has become an urban myth.
Michael Jacobson blames the controversy on a 2004 study that seemed to link soft drinks sweetened with high fructose corn syrup to the obesity epidemic.
They did not have one shred of evidence to back up their theory. And they eventually recanted. And they realized that high fructose corn syrup and sugar are essentially the same. But they weren't able to put the genie back in the bottle.
Overall, we still consume more sugar than we do high fructose corn syrup. The experts say we should be most concerned with something the two sugars share.
And it's fructose that we're worried about.
That's because it's the fructose in any sugar that goes directly to the liver, where it gets converted into fat, potentially leading to health problems like heart disease and diabetes.
I do have an issue with sugar, I mean, because it's so good. And I want it. That's my issue.
There's too much of it in our diets, and we ought to be eating less of sugars generally.
But there is a question whether our bodies metabolize high fructose corn syrup differently than table sugar. Scientists at UC Davis are conducting a long-term study to answer that. Results are expected by the end of this summer. Until then, call it high fructose corn syrup or call it sugar. But don't call either one a healthy choice. Michelle Miller, CBS News, New York.
Thanks to CBS News for that. What are your thoughts on that?
At the end of the day, high fructose corn syrup is a modified food.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing, you know, in excess, especially anything kind of a modified food, is good for you.
Right.
And, you know, and sugar in excess is not good for you as well.
Of course not.
No, it's not. Personally, if you give me a Coke with sugar in it and a Coke with high fructose corn syrup in it, I like the taste of the sugar, the cane sugar Coke.
Right.
It just has a more pleasant taste to it.
Right.
The thing that I find with high fructose corn syrup is it's like cloyingly sweet.
Right.
It just doesn't have an appealing taste to me. But, you know, it's such a big part of the U.S. food process that it's impossible to get away from it.
Which is my problem. I don't have a problem with high fructose corn syrup in the place of sugar.
Yeah.
What I have a problem with is the fact that farmers are wasting room growing this sugar that basically is used for shit like batteries and other crap.
Yeah. I mean, that's the biggest issue. I mean, all this stuff that's going on, that's all corn lobbyists.
Right.
That's all it is.
They could be growing real stuff, like artichokes and tomatoes and things that are delicious and good for us.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's basically corn products are easily stored. They use it in a variety of different things, and they can make it taste a number of different ways. They feed it to cows. They feed it to salmon, and farm-raised salmon.
In Chile, too.
Yeah. They turn it into ethanol, which is not very efficient. They turn it into sugar.
Or a sweetener, which is not very efficient.
Right. And then they subsidize it to bring the price down and tax the hell out of it when it's coming in. I mean, you're hitting a pretty kind of a harsh chord for me because in Brazil, they produce a lot of cane and they generate sugar and they generate ethanol out of it.
Right.
Okay. The ethanol that's generated out of cane has a much higher BTU rating. It's much more efficient than corn will ever be. The ethanol that comes from corn. But they make it so prohibitively expensive to come in that it doesn't make it. And so it doesn't get into the fuel market here. And the same is like they were saying on this program from CBS, that sugar, when it's imported, is very expensive because they put a really high duty tax on it. Okay?
Right.
So, yeah, high fructose corn syrup's cheap because it's subsidized to shit.
Right.
That's why. You know? And you know what? At the end of the day, people probably don't think it tastes very good.
No, it doesn't taste good. I think the less that we'll use it, it's the same thing with oil. We've become so dependent on oil.
Sure.
Now, there's this big push to go to electricity or to some other kind of fuel. We don't need to have high fructose corn syrup in our food when we've got sugar. Mind you, in Hawaii, they don't even process sugar anymore.
No.
They just don't do it there anymore because it's cheaper to do it elsewhere.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think we need to get that back. I think that we've gone too far. We've gone astray.
Agreed.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for agreeing. Hey, Spoon sent me this story today.
Oh, yeah?
Turns out Sam Caglione got a show on Discovery Channel.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Pioneer craft brewer and booming personality Sam Caglione is going to star on his own Discovery Channel show, Brewed, set to air this fall.
Wow. Yeah.
It's going to follow Caglione with archaeologist Pat McGovern. The pair will travel to New Zealand to attempt a tomato beer, as well as an old-world-style Italian beer that will serve an inspiration for his uncut... Oh, he's going to open a new restaurant called Italy.
Italy?
Yeah, Italy. He's going to make an Italian beer.
Wow, I'm going to refrain from comment on that.
Why, you don't like the name?
Not so much.
Italy?
No. No, that doesn't do
Is it too quiche for you?
It is. Yeah. It sounds like a focus group came up with that. Yeah.
Well, you know, everything's off-centered with him anyway.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just, is that kind of like Imperial IPA?
Yes. You know, like Imperial's not a word. I mean, literally, I have a problem with that. I mean, it should be called Imperial IPA. That's right. Or just call it a goddamn IPA. Who cares?
That's right.
All right. Well, listen, Don, thanks for joining me today, man.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. Always fun.
Reminiscing about old times.
Always good.
Tony Bourdain, the whole thing.
Yep. Yeah. It was very good. A lot of fun.
Yeah, good time. Mm-hmm. Hey, listen, you guys, thanks for showing up. Thanks for tuning in to My Life as a Foodie. Don't forget to join our Facebook group. We're on Facebook. There's a link on the website.
Facebook?
There's a Facebook group.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So join our Facebook group so you can get emails and... keep up with everybody and talk to other fans. Have fans. And don't forget to check out Dude Food too, man.
That'll be good.
Yeah, you can check out, actually the link, it'll actually be the post below this post for this episode, episode 1 beef jerky. The next one will be coming up very soon. It'll be on bacon, and I'll show you guys how to make bacon, and God only knows what else.
Awesome.
We're doing a lot of stuff. I'm going to do bratwurst, we're going to do chicken wings.
Yeah.
We're going to do potato skins.
Sure.
I'm going to show everybody how to make beer at home.
Really?
Because I think ultimately beer...
Like a stovetop?
Yeah, do it on the stovetop.
Okay,
with extract, the whole thing. Very
100%
simple.
100% kitchen utensils and equipment.
Yep.
Nothing special.
I'll show you how to make beer in your kitchen.
Cool.
Because it can be done in your kitchen.
Yeah. Hey, can you show people how to grill a steak?
Does that need to be shown?
I think so.
I might have to add that to the list.
Yeah, that and how to do a hamburger.
Yeah, and listen, it's endless. But ultimately, I think it's healthy. I mean, we dudes need to learn how to cook.
Sure,
it's not. It's, you know, don't be afraid of it.
Right,
because it really is easy.
Oh yeah.
Hey, listen, if I can do it, anybody can
do it. Say. Me too.
Listen, thanks again for showing up. Music from this episode from Rev Theory. Thanks to Rev Theory. Check out their website, revtheory.com, or go to the iTunes store. I've got a link on the website. You can check it out there. MyLifeIsAFoodie.com. Thanks again, Don.
My pleasure. Obrigado, we'll see.
Until next time, my name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie, and we'll see you next time.
Ciao.